Hey there, it is time for tonight's featured artist profile. And tonight's featured artist is the great Jimmy Reed. Jimmy Reed, legendary Chicago blues man, born in the Mississippi Delta, Washington County, Mississippi, 1925. Lives almost 51 years, makes it to 1976 when he dies out in California. In about 1940s, he moves up to Chicago and becomes a stalwart of the local music scene for blues and more, with his great guitar playing, songwriting, harmonica playing, kind of brings up the Mississippi Delta along with his friend Eddie Taylor. And then the crazy thing is, he gets signed to the VJ label, a small independent label, Chicago-based, and then in the 1950s and 60s begins to have quite a few hits, actually, on not only the rhythm and blues charts, but also they cross over onto the Billboard Hot 100 charts. And he's really one of the most influential blues players, composers, guitar players that we have. Many people's first encounter with Jimmy Reed, well, really first encounter with blues, electric blues, any kind of blues really, is through the songs made famous, written and recorded by Jimmy Reed. In his own lifetime, his songs were covered by the Rolling Stones, Elvis Presley, Charlie Rich, The Grateful Dead, Etta James, Bill Cosby, for example. And four of his hits, Honest I Do, Bright Lights, Big City, Big Boss Man, and Baby What You Want Me to Do, all made it on to the Hot 100 charts. So Jimmy Reed, he was actually the same age as my teacher down in Mississippi, James' son Thomas, who grew up 6 miles away in Leland, Mississippi. So he was kind of a local boy made good, and he toured throughout the United States. When I was down in Mississippi, I was working at the Indiana University. I'm sorry, not Indiana University, University of Mississippi in Oxford, Mississippi, University of Mississippi Blues Archive. And I'm working in there. And one day in walks in the president of the University of Mississippi. University of Mississippi president walks in, R. Gerald Turner. And this is a guy who doesn't really, you know, walk around the campus much except for official events. He walks in, you know, and who does he want to hear? He wants to hear one of his favorite artists, the great Jimmy Reed. Now, it's interesting that R. Gerald Turner, president of University of Mississippi, is a native Texan. And now he's actually the chancellor of Southern Methodist University in Dallas. So that kind of brings us to an interesting Texas connection, because Jimmy Reed is very popular all over the world, but he seems to have a particular influence in Texas. And Jimmy Vaughn, we'll talk a little bit more about him later. Jimmy Reed was a big influence on Jimmy Vaughn. So I've always had an interest in Jimmy Reed, all different kinds of ways. And then a few months back, my good family friend, Hap Channel, in my hometown, Gunnison, Colorado, just mentions to me, like offhand mentions to me, that he's been listening to Jimmy Reed. Why? Because when he was a teenager, they danced this very specific dance to Jimmy Reed. And plus, get this, Jimmy Reed shows up at Hap Channel's teenage dance club. And I said, Jimmy Reed. He said, yes, Jimmy Reed. So I had to know more. I had to know more about this. One of my great heroes, Jimmy Reed, and one of my good friends, Hap Channel, crossing paths many years ago. So I made arrangements and made an arrangement to interview Hap Channel. And I recorded that interview, and I'll be broadcasting that tonight. So what you're going to hear is an interview that I did with my good friend, Hap Channel. He lives some of the year in Gunnison, Colorado, my hometown. And I recorded this interview with him where he describes the scene of growing up in Northeast Texas around this shopping center, the Casa Linda Shopping Center, and the scene that was going on there. It's very interesting intersection. Well, you'll hear it. A very interesting intersection of blues and dance and good times. So here's my interview with Hap Channel.
So tell me where you were in the mid to late 1950s, Hap, yeah. Not in Gunnison, Colorado.
No, not at all. And I was born in 43, and so when the 50s came along, the late 50s, I was a teenager, and that was the rock and roll era. And I was in Dallas, Texas. Not a Texan by birth, I'm a Kansan, but mom and dad had moved the family to Dallas in 55. And I was in junior high school to start with there, and then in the late 50s, 58, 59, I was in high school. Graduated in 61.
Okay.
And I was in Northeast Dallas. Those people that know Dallas, people that don't know Dallas, it won't mean anything to them, but there's a lake out of Northeast Dallas called White Rock Lake, and just north of that and adjacent to the lake is an area that's variously called, mostly called Casa Linda. There's a Casa Linda shopping center there, and that was kind of what gave the area its name. But there's also Casa View shopping center, there's Lake Highlands, but in the area north and northeast of White Rock Lake was where mom and dad settled and where I grew up. And it was a very, very fast growing area of town back in the 50s. And
I'm visualizing lots of ranch houses side by side. Is that kind
of
what it
was
like?
Suburban mm-hmm. America at its worst or best,
yeah.
How you looked at it.
Right,
and I went to a brand new high school that was built specifically for the growth in Northeast Dallas.
What was the name of the high school?
Bryan Adams High School. Segregation was still alive and well in uh-huh. Dallas during this time, which was uh-huh. strange to us because we had moved from Kansas.
So I'm going to stop the interview there for just a second and say that Hap went on to describe to me the differences where he was born, as he says, in Kansas, and lived mostly in Butler County, Kansas, which is just east of Wichita, and describes there a world which is much more racially integrated. In fact, his sister's class president was African-American. And there's prominent African-American families there in Butler County in the mid-50s. Interesting, I would note, because it's the same time, really, as the Brown versus Board of Education decision, integrating or attempting to integrate schools throughout the nation, which was took place in Wichita, Kansas, not very far away. So Hap's describing a very interesting kind of integrated place, and then moves to Texas, which, as he says, segregation was going very strong there. So in the next part of the interview, though, we turn our attention to kind of the music that was going on at the time in this part of Texas in the mid-50s. And so here's Hap Channel again describing what it was like to listen to music and really dance, which is interesting. The whole dance thing gets very interesting. Here we go.
I was the age of 45s and
right.
rock and roll and, mm-hmm. You know, Casa Linda and Casa View plazas, the shopping centers both had record shops in them.
Okay.
And in those days, the record shops all had booths, soundproof booths that you could go into that were, you know, had a window in them or glass partition in them. And you could take demo 45s and say, you know, take five or six or whatever. I don't remember them limiting the number of records that you took in, but they probably did if
uh-huh.
they were smart.
Yeah. So you could listen to the records before you bought them.
Yeah,
before you bought them.
Exactly.
Wow.
Just sit
45,
in there.
Just
you and your friends could go in there. There were, you know, three or four chairs in there and a turntable.
Uh-huh.
And you could just play records to your heart's content. And
right.
We had a turntable in my sister's bedroom and, you know, stacks of 45s, and we would go back in there and listen to music.
Right. So 1958, 59, 60, I guess by 1959 and 60, we're talking the Elvis Presley would be
yeah.
dominant.
Yeah. He first broke in 55, I think I'm right,
right
with
yeah.
Heartbreak Hotel.
Yep.
Some of those. So, yeah,
yep.
Elvis was big.
And who else do you remember as being the big stars of the day?
Buddy Holly,
Uh-huh.
for sure.
Texan.
Yeah,
Yep.
Lubbock,
Yep.
Texas.
Yep.
Let's see, Elvis the Platters, Coasters. I'm probably dating myself a little bit here. Some of those came on a little bit later, but
And what about the singers that people now we now they're people make fun of them a little bit, I think unfairly, but the Pat Boones and the
yeah, Pat Boone was a
Philadelphia.
bit of a transition, if you will, from the previous era, if you will. You know, he was a squeaky clean guy with the white buck shoes and so on. So there was that element certainly. And
And later on in high school, were there dances? And were the did the dances have live music,
yeah,
or did they have
I
record
think that
hops?
our part of Dallas was very unusual, and dancing was huge. It
Okay.
was a big deal.
And what kind of dancing? What did it look like?
Well, it started out as kind of an awkward sort of bop, bebop kinds of things, but they called it bop. But what developed in Northeast Dallas was this strange couples dancing called the low life.
The low
The
life.
low life, and it
Okay.
was not done, to my knowledge, anywhere in the world.
Okay, that's great.
Not to be overly dramatic, but as far as I know, it
Yeah,
wasn't, and
the
it was
low
kind
life.
of the dirty dancing of its day.
Okay,
And it was done specifically to, you know, certain kind of rhythms and beats. And but the low life was done mostly to popular stuff.
Okay.
Chuck Berry stuff was great to do the lowlife too. Some
Okay.
it lent itself more to certain kinds of beats than others, and certain kind of music than others. You didn't lowlife to Pat Boone.
You didn't low life to Pat Boone.
For sure.
I'm gonna bring up a little bit of Chuck Berry and Jimmy Reed.
Okay. Maybelline.
So that's about 1955.
Okay.
So was that kind of a would that be a low life beat? That's pretty
Absolutely.
fast. Oh, you okay?
Yeah.
Really, that would be a low life
Yeah.
beat. Okay, great.
Not so much the original low life, but as it morphed by the time I was a junior or senior in high school, if that came up, I would be grabbing my favorite dancing partner. You could not keep us off the floor.
Okay,
When Maybelline was playing,
great.
or that beat, including Johnny B. Goode, and particularly Johnny B. Goode,
Right.
by the time we were a little bit older, but
Right. Okay, so yeah, so Johnny B. Goode.
yeah, Gene Snipes and I dancing the low life all
Okay.
over the floor.
And so the low life was a partner dance.
Yeah.
Okay,
And the
great. Kind
positions
of like
were.
a swing, kind of what I think of as what would it be, swing dancing in the mid to late 40s.
Yeah, I guess it was more equatable to that
Okay,
than anything,
so
but it was still a very
and
different step.
men and women, like men twirling the girls, guys twirling the gals, I
No,
guess.
not so much. It
Not so
was
much.
mostly a more I don't know how to describe it, because you stayed in a couple position.
Okay.
The twirling took place, but it was as a couple.
Okay.
It was, I guess the basic step of the low life was that the male became a pivot point, and the girl went around, if you will, not twirled under the arm or anything, but went around the guy.
Okay.
And then the girl became the pivot point, and the guy went around the girl.
Wow.
And you danced it mostly in a circle around the dance floor, but not circle up. It wasn't a circle dance. But you would dance counterclockwise around the dance floor, so that the entire crowd was kind of moving counterclockwise around,
oh, that's fascinating,
around the dance floor.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a rule or, you know.
It just happened. Just
the way that it did. It was a traveling kind of dance, if you will.
Okay, great. I'm going to play something else for you. This is Jimmy Reed. This is the slow one. Honest I Do.
Honest I Do. I know it well. Honest I Do. Yeah.
Right, so this would have been about 1959.
Right.
And this...
That's a lowlife, believe it or not. Even though we just listened to Chuck Berry in those faster tunes, this is more of the original lowlife.
Okay, the slower.
Yeah, back when I was in 7th and 8th grade, we had two dance clubs. I mean, this is how popular dancing was in our part of town. Every Friday night, we had... what was called a Teen Timers Dance Club.
Teen Timers Dance Club, okay.
Teen Timers Dance Club.
How does that work?
And you paid 50 cents and you got a card, and that card lasted, as I recall, for like 3 months membership.
Okay.
And at a larger room in one of the shopping centers, actually, that is still there. I just was there last year.
Okay.
We would, you know, show up at the door and show our Teen Timers Dance card, and we would go, and that was records. They rarely had live music at that.
Okay.
And then every other Saturday night at the local rec center, just across the street from my high school, was the White Rockers Dance Club.
Okay.
And that was a little bit more expensive, and more often than not, they had live bands there, but they were all local bands. Many of the bands came from my high school.
You know? Oh, really?
Yeah.
So were they fellow teenagers or recent teenagers? Yeah. Oh, great.
Friends of mine. But a lot of the music was like Jimmy Reed. There was a lot of harmonica playing, and that backbeat, you know, that really solid backbeat stuff.
Let's stop and play another Jimmy Reed here.
Okay.
Big Boss Man.
Big Boss Man.
Does that ring a bell? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It has a really heavy backbeat.
Right.
That the 2 and the 4 of the measure are being hit really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that event, that was a great, that's it.
That's a low
really
life.
Really great low life tune.
Okay, great.
So here we go out to Teen Timers Dance Club. And I didn't know for nothing. I mean, there I was, a 12-year-old, and you know, my sisters would, oh, you got to come to Teen Timers with us. And I think as much as anything, they probably wanted a dancing partner
that
they could rely on
right.
and then send me on my way.
Once the other dancers showed up.
Exactly. So the music that was played, were some of which were familiar to me because of the 45s that we had, but then here came this Jimmy Reed that was playing, and I didn't know Jimmy Reed from anything. But he really caught on in Northeast Dallas, and I attribute it to the fact that we danced the lowlife, and the lowlife fit that particular style of music real well. I do not remember that we played that kind of bluesy, heavy beat music other than Jimmy Reed.
Interesting.
I don't remember another artist that we listened to and danced to that was anything like him or like that. And so it was a real, what I thought was an anomaly. You know, I would go other places and say, well, do you have any Jimmy Reed music? And they'd say, who's that?
Wow, fascinating.
It was played a lot, not even so much at White Rocker Dance Club, because that was live music, that was mostly our bands, but at Teen Timers, where we had recorded music played, he was, you know, probably every, I don't know, 8th, 6th, 7th, 8th record was a Jimmy Reed tune.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I remember that Reed was in Dallas, and I didn't know that. I didn't know he was in Dallas, but he showed up at Teen Timers Dance Club, and I knew that. You know, I was there.
So you were there when he walked in?
Yeah.
Wow.
He walked in the door, and, you know, people were my, you know, the fans, the crowd was mobbing him and getting autographs and all
that. Oh, great, really?
And he didn't play.
He was just kind of an appearance.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think that he knew that his records were selling like hotcakes out in this Casa Linda area, White Rock, and he thought that he'd go take a look at what this phenomenon was.
That's white, amazing.
These totally white kids that were playing his music.
I think one of the interesting things I find, let me know what you think, is for me in some ways it's so interesting that this African-American tradition through the radio and really 45s could land in an all-white up-and-coming suburb of Dallas and just resonate so deeply.
It's a very strange phenomenon that happened like it did, because like I said, the genre was not familiar to me in any way, shape, or form. I don't know any of the black performers of the era that were popular and known, and I didn't even know anything about Jimmy Reed. I just know that we listened to his music and we danced to it and we loved it.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. So do you think your sister would remember the lowlife dancing days differently than you? What do you think she would remember differently than what you did? Because she was older.
That was kind of interesting because this past year happened to have been the 55th, my 55th high school reunion, 2016. And we were asked to join forces with the other two classes, the first two classes at Bryan Adams, and have a combined reunion. So I was a co-chair of the committee, and we had what we call the founding classes reunion. So
excellent.
59, 60, and 61. Well, she was in 59, and she came to the reunion from Costa Rica, which is where she lives. Uh-huh. And we danced the lowlife together.
Oh,
as
fantastic.
As we had. And her recollection of it was early lowlife.
Uh-huh.
And my recollection was more what I did when I was a junior in high school, which was a little bit different.
Can you describe the differences?
The early one was more that Jimmy Reed sound. The later one was faster.
Okay.
It was less pronounced in the body positions of the male and the female.
Okay.
The early body positions were more, like I said, the kind of dirty dancing of its day.
Okay.
There was a little bit of kind of hunching that went on as you danced around the dance floor.
Yep.
It's sort of what my dad used to call the why dance.
The why dance.
The why dance. And I said, what do you mean the why dance? And he said, why dance?
That's a great one. That's a great one.
And so then, just within those two or three years, it became a little bit more mainstream, I guess you would say.
Do you think it was influenced at all by American Bandstand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think all dancing was influenced by American Bandstand.
Okay. But the lowlife, in your mind, remains, the early lowlife especially, remains separate from what the kids in Philadelphia were doing.
Oh, yeah. Way separate.
Okay.
And no similarity whatsoever.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It's fun to reminisce.
Yeah, it's fun to hear about it.
Hey, that's my interview that I did with Hap Channel earlier this winter in his lovely home in Gunnison, Colorado, my hometown. And him describing an entire dance that went around based on the music, pretty much some Chuck Berry and a little bit of Jimmy Reed, called the lowlife, the Casa Linda lowlife. Sadly, not very well documented. A phenomenon of Texas life. There's a novel that came out about 10 years ago, To Love and Die in Dallas. And the author on that one is Mary Elizabeth Goldman. And she describes a similar... she describes exactly the Teen Timers Dance Club, home of the original Dirty Dancing, the birthplace of the Casa Linda lowlife. Amateur bands imitating Jerry Lee Lewis, Jimmy Reed, Buddy Holly, played nonstop for the dancers and listeners alike. Another blog posting from almost 12 years ago, somebody writes in and says, the Casa Linda lowlife was a teenage art form done to the blues in North Dallas. So very interesting. So again, my thanks so much to Hap Channel for that interview describing not only the whole dance of the lowlife, but also getting to actually meet Jimmy Reed. Jimmy Reed is our featured artist tonight. Here he is.